Chapter 6 Snow. The forerunners had gone. Tomorrow, the men of Askativar would march north on the broad, vague trail that divided their range, while the smaller group from Landin would take the old road up the coast. Like Agat, Umexaman had judged it best to keep the two forces apart until the eve of fighting. They were allied only by Wold's authority. Many of Umexaman's men, though veterans of many raids and forays before the winter peace, were reluctant to go on this unseasonable war. And a sizable faction, even within his own kin, so detested this alliance with the Farborns that they were ready to make any trouble they could. Uquet and others had said openly that when they had finished with the Gaul, they would finish off the witches. Agat discounted this, foreseeing that victory would modify and defeat end their prejudice. But it worried Umexaman, who did not look so far ahead. "Our scouts will keep you in sight all along. After all, the Gaul may not wait on the border for us." "The long valley under Cragtop would be a good place for a battle," Umexaman said with his flashing smile. "Good luck, Altera." "Good luck to you, Umexaman." They parted as friends, there under the mud-cemented stone gateway of the winter city. As Agat turned, something flickered in the dull afternoon air beyond the arch, a wavering, drifting movement. He looked up, startled, then turned back. "Look at that!" The native came out from the walls and stood beside him a minute, to see for the first time the stuff of old men's tales. Agat held his hand out, palm up. A flickering speck of white touched his wrist and was gone. The long veil of stubble fields and used-up pasture, the creek, the dark inlet of the forest, and the farther hills to south and west, all seemed to tremble very slightly, to withdraw, as random flakes fell from the low sky, twirling and slanting a little, though the wind was down. Children's voices cried in excitement behind them among the high-peaked wooden roofs. "Snow is smaller than I thought," Umexaman said at last, dreamily. "I thought it would be colder. The air seems warmer than it did before." Agat roused himself from the sinister and charming fascination of the twirling fall of the snow. "Till we meet in the north," he said, and, pulling his fur collar close around his neck against the queer, searching touch of the tiny flakes, set out on the path to Landin. A half kilo into the forest he saw the scarcely marked side path that led to the hunter's shelter, and passing it felt as if his veins were running liquid light. "Come on, come on," he told himself, impatient with his recurrent loss of self-control. He had got the whole thing perfectly straight in the short intervals for thinking he had had today. Last night had been last night. All right, it was that and nothing more. Aside from the fact that she was, after all, a hilf and he was human, so there was no future in the thing. It was foolish on other counts. Ever since he had seen her face on the black steps over the tide, he had thought of her and yearned to see her, like an adolescent mooning after his first girl. And if there was anything he hated, it was the stupidity, the obstinate stupidity of uncontrolled passion. It led men to take blind risks, to hazard really important things for a mere moment of lust, to lose control over their acts. So, in order to stay in control, he had gone with her last night. That was merely sensible, to get the fit over with. So he told himself once more, walking along very rapidly, his head high, while the snow danced thinly around him. Tonight he would meet her again, for the same reason. At the thought, a flood of warm light and an aching joy ran through his body and mind. He ignored it. Tomorrow he was off to the north, and if he came back, Then there would be time enough to explain to the girl that there could be no more such nights, no more lying together on his fur cloak in the shelter of the forest's heart, starlight overhead, and the cold and the great silence all around. No, no more. The absolute happiness she had given him came up in him like a tide, drowning all thought. He ceased to tell himself anything. He walked rapidly with his long stride in the gathering darkness of the woods, and as he walked, sang under his breath, not knowing that he did so, some old love song of his exiled race. The snow scarcely penetrated the branches. It was getting dark very early, he thought, as he approached the place where the path divided. And this was the last thing in his mind, when something caught his ankle in mid-stride and sent him pitching forward. He landed on his hands and was halfway up, when a shadow on his left became a man, silvery white in the gloom, who knocked him over before he was fairly up. Confused by the ringing in his ears, Agat struggled free of something holding him, and again tried to stand up. He seemed to have lost his bearings, and did not understand what was happening, though he had an impression that it had happened before, and also that it was not actually happening. There were several more of the silvery-looking men with stripes down their legs and arms, and they held him by the arms, while another one came up and struck him with something across the mouth. There was pain. The darkness was full of pain and rage. With a furious and skillful convulsion of his whole body, he got free of the silvery men, catching one under the jaw with his fist, and sending him out of the scene backward. But there were more and more of them, and he could not get free a second time. They hit him, and when he hid his face in his arms against the mud of the path, they kicked his sides. He lay pressed against the blessed harmless mud, trying to hide, and heard somebody breathing very strangely. Through that noise, he also heard Umeksaman's voice. Even he, then. But he did not care, so long as they would go away, would let him be. It was getting dark very early. It was dark, pitch dark. He tried to crawl forward. He wanted to get home to his people who would help him. It was so dark he could not see his hands. Soundlessly and unseen in the absolute blackness, snow fell on him and around him on the mud and leaf mold. He wanted to get home. He was very cold. He tried to get up, but there was no west or east, and sick with pain, he put his head down on his arm. "Come to me," he tried to call in the mind speech of Altera, but it was too hard to call so far into the darkness. It was easier to lie still right here. Nothing could be easier. In a high stone house in Landin, by a driftwood fire, Ala Pasval lifted her head suddenly from her book. She had a distinct impression that Jacob Agat was sending to her, but no message came. It was queer. There were all too many queer byproducts and after-effects and inexplicables involved in mind speech. Many people here in Landin never learned it, and those who did used it very sparingly. Up north, in Atlantica Colony, they had mind spoken more freely. She herself was a refugee from Atlantica, and remembered how, in the terrible winter of her childhood, she had mind spoken with the others all the time. And after her mother and father died in the famine, for a whole moon phase after, over and over again she had felt them sending to her, felt their presence in her mind, but no message, no words, silence. "Jacob!" She bespoke him long and hard, but there was no answer. At the same time, in the armory, checking over the expedition's supplies once more, Huru Pilotson abruptly gave way to the uneasiness that had been preying on him all day and burst out, "What the hell does Agat think he's doing?" "He's pretty late," one of the armory boys affirmed. "Is he over at Tivar again?" "Cementing relations with the Mealy Faces," Pilotson said, gave a mirthless giggle, and scowled. All right, come on, let's see about the parkas. At the same time, in a room paneled with wood like ivory satin, Seiko S. Smith burst into a fit of silent crying, wringing her hands and struggling not to send to him, not to bespeak him, not even to whisper his name aloud. Jacob. At the same time, Rollery's mind went quite dark for a while. She simply crouched motionless where she was. She was in the hunter's shelter. She had thought, with all the confusion of the move from the tents into the warren-like kin-houses of the city, that her absence and very late return had not been observed last night. But today was different. Order was re-established, and her leaving would be seen. So she had gone off in broad daylight, as she so often did, trusting that no one would take special notice of that. She had gone circuitously to the shelter, curled down there in her furs, and waited till dark should fall, and finally he should come. The snow had begun to fall. Watching it made her sleepy. She watched it, wondering sleepily what she would do tomorrow, for he would be gone, and everyone in her clan would know she had been out all night. That was tomorrow. It would take care of itself. This was tonight. Tonight. And she dozed off, till suddenly she woke with a great start and crouched there a little while, her mind blank, dark. Then abruptly she scrambled up and with flint and tinderbox lighted the basket lantern she had brought with her. By its tiny glow she headed downhill till she struck the path, then hesitated and turned west. Once she stopped and said, "Altera," in a whisper. The forest was perfectly quiet in the night. She went on till she found him lying across the path. The snow, falling thicker now, streaked across the lantern's dim, small glow. The snow was sticking to the ground now instead of melting, and it had stuck in a powdering of white all over his torn coat and even on his hair. His hand, which she touched first, was cold, and she knew he was dead. She sat down on the wet, snow-rimmed mud by him and took his head on her knees. He moved and made a kind of whimper, and with that Rollery came to herself. She stopped her silly gesture of smoothing the powdery snow from his hair and collar, and sat intent for a minute. Then she eased him back down, got up, automatically tried to rub the sticky blood from her hand, and with the lantern's aid began to seek around the sides of the path for something. She found what she needed, and set to work. Soft, weak sunlight slanted down across the room. In that warmth, it was hard to wake up, and he kept sliding back down into the waters of sleep, the deep, tideless lake. But the light always brought him up again, and finally he was awake, seeing the high gray walls about him and the slant of sunlight through glass. He lay still while the shaft of watery golden light faded and returned, slipped from the floor, and pooled on the farther wall, rising higher, reddening. Alla Paspal came in, and seeing he was awake, signed to someone behind her to stay out. She closed the door and came to kneel by him. Alteran houses were sparsely furnished. They slept on pallets on the carpeted floor, and for chairs used at most a thin cushion. So Alla knelt and looked down at Agat, her worn black face lighted strongly by the reddish shaft of sun. There was no pity in her face as she looked at him. She had borne too much too young for compassion and scruple ever to rise from very deep in her, and in her old age she was quite pitiless. She shook her head a little from side to side, as she said softly, "Jacob, what have you done?" He found that his head hurt him when he tried to speak, so having no real answer, he kept still. "What have you done?" "How did I get home?" he asked at last, forming the words so poorly with his smashed mouth that she raised her hand to stop him. "How you got here, is that what you asked? She brought you, the Hilf girl. She made a sort of travois out of some branches and her furs, and rolled you onto it, and hauled you over the ridge into the land gate. At night, in the snow. Nothing left on her but her breeches. She had to tear up her tunic to tie you on. Those Hilfs are tougher than the leather they dress in. She said the snow made it easier to pull. No snow left now. That was the night before last. You've had a pretty good rest, all in all." She poured him a cup of water from the jug on a tray nearby and helped him drink. Close over him, her face looked very old, delicate with age. She said to him with the mind speech unbelievingly, "How could you do this? You were always a proud man, Jacob." He replied the same way, wordlessly. Put into words, what he told her was, "I can't get on without her." The old woman flinched physically away from the sense of his passion, and as if in self-defense spoke aloud. "But what a time to pick for a love affair, for a romance, when everyone depended on you." He repeated what he had told her, for it was the truth, and all he could tell her. She bespoke him with harshness. "But you're not going to marry her, so you'd better learn to get on without her." He replied only, "No." She sat back on her heels a while. When her mind opened again to his, it was with a great depth of bitterness. "Well, go ahead. What's the difference? At this point, whatever we do, any of us, alone or together, is wrong. We can't do the right thing, the lucky thing. We can only go on committing suicide, little by little, one by one, till we're all gone, till Altera is gone, all the exiles dead." "Allah," he broke in aloud, shaken by her despair, the men went?" "What men? Our army?" She said the words sarcastically. "Did they march north yesterday without you?" "Pilotson. If Pilotson had led them anywhere, it would have been to attack Tivar, to avenge you. He was crazy with rage yesterday. And they..." "The Hilfs? No, of course they didn't go. When it became known that Wold's daughter is running off to sleep with a Farborn in the woods, Wold's faction comes in for a certain amount of ridicule and discredit. You can see that. Of course, it's easier to see it after the fact. But I should have thought..." "For God's sake, Allah!" "All right. Nobody went north. We sit here and wait for the Gaul to arrive when they please." Jacob Agat lay very still, trying to keep himself from falling headfirst backwards into the void that lay under him. It was the blank and real abyss of his own pride, the self-deceiving arrogance from which all his acts had sprung, the lie. If he went under, no matter. But what of his people, whom he had betrayed? Allah bespoke him after a while. "Jacob, it was a very little hope at best. You did what you could. Man and unman can't work together. 600 home years of failure should tell you that. Your folly was only their pretext. If they hadn't turned on us over it, they would have found something else very soon. They're our enemies as much as the Gaul, or the Winter, or the rest of this planet that doesn't want us. We can make no alliances but among ourselves. We're on our own. Never hold your hand out to any creature that belongs to this world." He turned his mind away from hers, unable to endure the finality of her despair. He tried to lie closed in on himself, withdrawn, but something worried him insistently, dragged at his consciousness, until suddenly it came clear, and struggling to sit up, he stammered, "Where is she? You didn't send her back." Clothed in a white Alteran robe, Rollery sat cross-legged, a little farther away from him than Allah had been. Allah was gone. Rollory sat there, busy with some work, mending a sandal, it seemed. She had not seemed to notice that he spoke. Perhaps he had only spoken in a dream. But she said presently in her light voice, "That old one upset you. She could have waited. What can you do now? I think none of them knows how to take 6 steps without you." The last red of the sunlight made a dull glory on the wall behind her. She sat with a quiet face, eyes cast down as always, absorbed in mending a sandal. In her presence, both guilt and pain eased off and took their due proportion. With her, he was himself. He spoke her name aloud. "Oh, sleep now. It hurts you to talk," she said with a flicker of her timid mockery. "Will you stay?" he asked. "Yes." "As my wife," he insisted, reduced by necessity and pain to the bare essential. He imagined that her people would kill her if she went back to them. He was not sure what his own people might do to her. He was her only defense, and he wanted the defense to be certain. She bowed her head as if in acceptance. He did not know her gestures well enough to be sure. He wondered a little at her quietness now. The little while he had known her, she had always been quick with motion and emotion, but it had been a very little while. As she sat there working away, her quietness entered into him, and with it he felt his strength begin to return.